Welcome in, everyone. RFQ Refugees Podcast. Ted here, John here. Here to break down a mixed weekend, I think, in DC United soccer, or DC soccer, I should say. Overall, there was some good, there was some bad, more good than bad, and we'll get into it. I'm maybe not going to be as negative. I think John's going to come in with the negative emotions for this.
I'll do that job. It'll be my responsibility.
But first, I do, John. How was your weekend?
I was in Nashville. Mm-hmm. For a conference, and I've decided that I don't like Nashville very much.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why. Let's get into it. Nashville to me is like Walt Disney World for bachelorette parties and for people who want to cosplay as Southerners. There are pop-up like food trucks where you can buy cowboy hats in parking lots, in alleys between bars. This is absolutely ridiculous. Just absurdity. Now, everything else about that city, it is an absurd. It is much larger than you think it is. Whatever you think about Nashville, if you haven't been, however big you think it is, it's bigger. However many skyscrapers you think it has more. I was trying to think, I was Googling, like, what is a comparable city to Nashville? And Charlotte is, like, very, very comparable to me. Haven't been in both those places. I think it's very similar. But, yeah, the food is good, and the vibes are just very weird, and I don't like them.
Got the hot chicken. You went to a Predators game, I think.
I was going to. I was going to, and then I was like, all right, I'll buy one like an hour before. And then the get-in price became $90 for Upper. I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I did go to Third Man Records.
Nice.
Jack White's record store, which in my mind was going to be bigger, but it was about the size of this room, basically. Very, very small. And then the thing I did that was crazy was I got on a 6 a.m. flight to come back and play adult baseball. Back here in Virginia, which
fun.
Now we won. It was great, but also my body is wrecked forever. You have a certain hue about yourself. How did you spend your weekend?
I spent it on soccer fields. I've been doing my week was filled. I have learned that when you tell your assigner you're available, don't expect them to give you breaks. They will just throw you on games and they will keep doing it. So lesson learned on that front. I think this might be like the third time I've learned that lesson. I did some like D3 scrimmages with Randolph College and Sweetbriar and Hollins College out in Roanoke. So that was,
I didn't know you did college games. That's pretty cool.
Well, so this was like half field, like scrimmage type games. It really wasn't any stakes. It's just kind of coaches trying to get their teams together, try to work on some things. So nothing too formal or impactful, but
I still think it's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. The women's teams they had there, they were pretty good. It's like a, you know, it's not like elite high level, but they had some pretty good players out there. So it was fun. It was enjoyable. But I was actually in like such a rush to get to that game. I actually didn't arrive on time, which was not my fault. It was my signer's fault for giving me like an 11 o'clock game, like 30 minutes away from my site. Not my fault. The coach was really nice, but he's like, "Oh, I just started. You can just jump in." So it was fine.
I do my record of the week now. This is a thing that I do. I recommend Skylar Spence. This album's called Prom King.
Nice.
He used to be named Crystal Pepsi. Was his original name, but then Pepsi sued him or threatened to sue him, and he had to change his name to Skylar Spence.
Nice.
And it's good. It's a good album. Check it out.
Nice. All right, let's get into it. Let's start talking. I think we've dropped a bunch of people watching at this point.
Don't care. Hi, everybody.
Probably people have turned off the listening. You can scroll ahead. I'm sure people can scroll ahead. We'd like
there
to
are timestamps. There are going to be timestamps in our thing. You can just skip to 5 minutes or whatever it's going to be.
5 minutes, yes. Let's get into it. Let's talk DC United. 3-2 losers at home to Orlando. Before we get into a disappointing result overall. We've discussed, this team has looked really good. This is like the first game I feel like I kind of left and, you know, I felt low. That was disappointing considering the way it started, considering the way the team came out in the second half and got the lead back. Just to kind of have it all collapse like that was extremely frustrating. I don't know if you felt the same or...
Yes. No, I felt the exact same.
Yeah. Like we've talked about this year, you know, this is a year where, you know, there's going to be some trials and tribulations. There's going to be some trying some things. The team has a lot of roster, like dead space that they're trying to like work through. We'll get into a minute. Maybe they can clean up some of that. We'll get into that. Some roster rule changes that are coming. But, you know, and I think this is all about, you know, figuring out who we are. I think we're seeing it in how Troy Lissane is putting out lineups. You know, he again starts Jackson Hopkins in for Matty Patola, who I think had probably the roughest game. And then he also threw in Christian Fletcher. Overall, like, you know, when you saw this lineup, I think you were maybe a little jazzed by it.
I was.
I am a Matty Patola stan, so I'm a little bit dejected by it a little bit, because not that I don't like Jackson Hopkins, I just don't see him as a number six.
I don't either, but I was more excited about Christian Fletcher.
Yeah, but man, they did not have a good game.
They did not. They really did. They really did not rise to the moment. One might say, unfortunately.
Yeah. Give me some overall impressions. Like, what were your thoughts on the lineup and maybe where you thought maybe it kind of went wrong?
I don't know if Troy was taking Orlando City somewhat lightly by being able to put those two players in from the start. Obviously, Ted being injured put us in a bit of a pickle from a forward perspective. We don't have a lot of depth there. All you have to do is look at the bench and realize what the story is there. But, you know, I thought it was likely to be promising. I thought overall I was pretty pleased with that. But, you know, Christian Benteke can only do so much. We continue to need more creative attacking players. Christian Dahomey continues to not be one of those players. It's a struggle, right? I mean, people were mad about, I think Lassane said something about, you know, have to look at himself for when he made the changes or decisions he made with the lineup or when substitutions got made. But the bench just does not inspire confidence. If you look at the four subs that came in this game, Jacob Merle at 77, it's a rookie that's got like maybe 100 minutes total of MLS play. Matty Peltolo came in a half, like you mentioned. Pedro Santos, 87th minute. And Gabriel Pirani comes on a halftime with Peltolo, who we'll talk about him, I'm sure, much more. But there's just the depth is not really there. If injuries start to happen, or in next week's case, when yellow card suspensions come into play, real problems there as well. You know, we just need more. We need more players here. We need more experience depth to be able to, you know, feel confident about you know, a victory sometimes.
RGNDC from the broadcast, did it look like DC players were affected by Orlando's response, United's physicality, and the referee's thin skin? Okay, I'll get into the referee a little bit. I'm not as upset as some people about the referee. I think it's actually a bit more on DC than the referee in this case.
Longtime listeners will note Ted typically does not have a problem with the referee.
I don't, because people, I think, yeah, and I'll get into it. I thought the players were a bit put off by Orlando's constant falling down. I will say, I think so. You know, I watched, I wrote for my preview piece, I watched Orlando versus New York Red Bulls. Orlando, I think for the first, and you know, again, I haven't watched all of their games, but for the first, you know, first few months of the season, we're very much trying to play slow build up, passing possession style soccer. They were going to sit kind of a little bit in a mid block, win the ball, and then kind of so slowly move it up. And, you know, for the first few games of the season, it hasn't worked. They've been very slow. They haven't been able to generate chances. You know, they've signed Muriel and Duncan McGuire, of course, is still there. They have not lived up to expectation. They are well short, you know, on their expected goals and actual goals.
Muriel, especially, not impressive.
Yeah, McGuire. Sorry, did I say McGuire?
No, I'm thinking about Muriel.
Muriel. Yeah.
Very, very unimpressive so far for Orlando. Glad that that's not our signing.
Yeah. It's been a real struggle. And I think what we saw, you know, I kind of wondered, I said, well, you know, there is 2 weeks, you know, they have 2 weeks now. They were off last week. If you wanted to instill some type of change or try to, and I think they had hinted at it too, I'd seen some pregame or some pre-match stuff from them. And they talked about maybe being a little bit more comfortable. They came out of this game, and I think they kind of took DC for a loop in that they played a very much a pressing style. They were much more direct. They were much more trying to hit DC. DC, I think, came out well. And of course, they get the corner kick and they get the goal. But then from the goal, and then, you know, maybe there were a few more chances, but then from about minute 20 to minute 45, Orlando really had most of the game. And I think the style kind of threw them for a loop. They zeroed in, I think, on Jackson Hopkins, particularly, who had a very rough night. This pass, I think he was in the 60% for passing accuracy. Yep. You go watch the game again, you can see passes that were, you know, maybe not well thought out, and, you know, Orlando was just eating them up. It really necessitated the change. They get the goal. It's a very, you know, nicely worked goal from the wings. You know, Herrera and Dahomey get kind of caught up, and Antley as well. Both kind of get kind of caught up. And
Antley is not the guy you want trying to run down an Orlando City winger. And that did not work out.
Yeah. I still thought Antley did very well. Like, he had some very big moments in this game. I think the pressing and the style and the way DC got hit, I think maybe they weren't quite prepared for. And I think losing that midfield battle, like they did in that first half, I think really hurt them. Because if you want to create a short field, if you want to create a pressing field, that kind of middle of the field is very important to win at, because it allows you to maintain the pressure. It allows you to keep basically the Orlando team pinned back in front of you. If you can't do that, if you can't, you know, establish that press there, then you're in for a long night. And I think we saw that a bit in the first half about how they just couldn't maintain possession. When they would get the ball, they would try to move it forward, and then it would instantly be taken back. And credit to Orlando, they came out and played, I thought, a pretty well. They planned for it pretty well, and I thought they executed it pretty well. So, good to see Christian Benteke get on the board. Still a great goal from him.
Still a sky dunk there off of Mateus' quick corner. Out jumps him on the back post. Pretty just a classic Benteke goal, really, honestly. And the Thor Hallsen goal was, to your point, it was a bit of a breakdown in the midfield. Antley can't keep up on the speed. And Gulo crosses and finds wide open in the box.
It's McVay, too, trying to sort of cover. And McVay is a very good defender, but he is not a guy who's blessed with a bunch of speed, I think.
Was it McVay on the wing that was? Okay.
Yeah, well, that was the one.
Neither of them fast.
Yeah, neither of them all that fast. I think Antley's got a little bit of speed to him. He's not.
McVay at least was involved in the goal, in the build up to the second DC United goal, which we can talk about.
Yeah.
Anything else in the first half to really get into?
No, it was rough. Christian Fletcher, again, I still want to highlight him. Just not a, you know, he never really got a good moment. And I think, you know, I think at this point, this cements him in my mind. I think he's a great guy to bring off the bench. Change of pace. I think going against tired players, he'll get, you know, more opportunities and better opportunities. But as sort of a week in, week out starter, I don't think he's there yet. And I think the same with Jackson Hopkins as well.
The challenge for Christian Fletcher is, okay, so he played this game, didn't play against Columbus, played 6 minutes against Montreal, 25 minutes against Miami, 32 against Cincinnati. So he played the first four games of the season. February 24th, March 2nd, March 10th, March 16th, and then nothing. And then he's just been chilling. So I think the challenge is, you know, to your point, he's maybe not ready to be a starter. He's not going to get any more ready growing cobwebs. No, none of the players, fair, I've never seen a player at DC United get better from training. Just hasn't happened. Maybe that's a possibility. Maybe that like happens at other places due to like the quality of the training, the players just grow. It does not appear to happen here. It's all on the field. Jackson Hopkins continues to get the opportunities because of the work he does in training, according to Troy Lesane. We're all trying to work through the fact that, is he a six? We don't think he is, but that's where he's playing because that's where he's needed right now. We're going to find a situation next week due to Mateus Klik being out on yellow card accumulation. We'll talk about the 5,000 yellow cards in the second half, where Hopkins and Peltola are likely to be your two-man combo. And I think you muted on Twitter, like, that might be good because Maddie's much more of a stay-at-home guy, and then maybe it allows Jackson to act more like Mateus on a typical game. So we'll see if that works out.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be curious to watch that because I think we all know he is a much more offensive-minded player. You know, he started out on the wing. I think he doesn't have quite the skill set for that. I think he could be a very effective two-way number eight type player. You know, if those defensive responsibilities and sort of that first pass is sort of on him, not on him to have to create. So
a Jackson Hopkins social media post this weekend, he was at the card seller, which is a card shop in Fredericksburg, and he pulled his own card out of a pack. which I think is great. I know for a fact that one of the kids who works at the card seller used to play with Jackson on youth soccer. And he was like, I was better than him when I was like, well, I guess it didn't work out for you. I don't know what to tell you. One of you is on a card and one of you is opening them. So I don't know, man.
RGNDC says, was this the first game the team really missed Knauss in the midfield? I don't think this is the first game they really I contend that once let's talk about the second half. Once Petzola got in the game, DC switched the field right back. They were the better team. They were the better team for, you know, I would say a slight majority of this game. And we'll get into the goals they give up are not, they're not goals where it's built by constant pressure by Orlando. They are goals that literally come from, you know, a set piece and then a, you know, an individual mistake, you know, from either McVay or Bartlett, whoever was supposed to mark back or whoever didn't go mark back, or maybe you just give it to them both.
Pirani turnover at the top of the 18, two midfielders that don't close because they think they have space. Yeah. A lot of stuff went wrong.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Pirani. I need to affix. I don't necessarily need to affix a dunce cap because while he scored a goal, you know, and I just talked about the fact that he turned over the ball that caused the winner. That's okay. Pirani comes in. He's pretty active. He's decently active. His goal is not something to really write home about from the perspective of what happens, that McVay carries the ball and then actually wants to make a run after that. The ball gets crossed, I think, from Herrera into Benteke. Benteke plays it down, which is what we talk about all the time. Like, boy, wouldn't it be great if there was a goal-minded player who could be at Benteke's feet as Benteke sends a head things down. Heads the ball down, doesn't make any mistakes, scores from about 10 yards out, gets the lead, goes over to the corner. I assume, I couldn't see because he was facing our back, I assume he was swearing at RFK refugees into the corner. I think he probably had like a sign. He pulled up his shirt and had F John Hoffman on his chest, maybe, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But great goal. The funny thing about that goal is that he later had two opportunities to win it. One he should have scored. He shot with his left foot and hit the outside of the net, had an open opportunity. The other time was in stoppage time. He shot it on goal. Goalie saved it. Let's check what his XG was for this game, because I guarantee that it's the most that he's ever had for DC United.
Potentially made up for that one chance. But I agree, he was very active. I'm curious if, you know, he was maybe playing a little bit higher up the field as kind of a, you know, for lack of a better term, like a sort of second striker towards Benteke. Maybe that's a role you want to put him in, because I think he is very good at getting into good places and getting into good spots. He sometimes will attempt to try to beat a guy on the dribble. Go ahead. Do you have the stat?
No, yeah, I'm looking at it. So he, to your point, he played 45 minutes. How many passes do you think he attempted?
Six.
12, but still very low. I think very, very low. I don't have his heat map here. 0.51 expected goals, 0.49 expected goals on target, 21 sure touches. Yeah, not passing the. Yeah, not having a lot of ground duel opportunities. I think there's something to that. Like, you simplify his game, right?
Yeah.
You just say, like, all right, just use your vision. Get around the box. Don't try to take people on. Don't try to create. Just be a bottom feeder. Like, just follow around the tall guy. See what he makes for you.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, again, I'm sure his shot creating actions were still extremely low. It's just not, he hasn't been able to develop it. And maybe
no chances created.
Yeah. Maybe he gets it. I don't know. That's the problem. But it's good to see him get a goal. Maybe this starts a trend. RGNDC Pirani is a better false nine coming off the bench. I mean, I'd say that maybe
better than anybody else that we have on the bench. That's for certain.
Yeah. So, what remains to be seen. I mean, honestly, I mean, the real role for that sort of role, you know, maybe he fills in that Tecu DiPietro role when Tecu DiPietro gets hurt,
which is often.
Yeah. And we got to talk about, yeah. That's a question. I might ask Troy Lesane, what are you going to do about this? Because this is now a problem with Tecu DiPietro. I wanted to sort of say, you know, one more thing, you know, I'm gonna gush a little bit on Matty Petzola, but just the nature of which when he came into the game, suddenly there was an outlet for a player in trouble to, you know, pass the ball back. He made, I think he made a really excellent line breaking pass right down the middle. I think it was either to Pirani or to somebody that sort of started or almost generated a chance. So that type of play that he brings, you know, I respect Lassane and what he did. I know he clearly wasn't happy over the Montreal game, thought he deserved maybe to see some other things. He should be the starter out there. He is by far one of the better players in that role. I think he has been excellent mostly this year. I'm extremely excited to see what he can bring. And I think he should start. I think he will start next week. I mean, obviously, because of Click's out. But even when Click comes back, I expect him maybe to be back into that sort of that starting role. And we'll see. We got him against is an opportunity for him against New York. So anything else? I mean, obviously we talked about the goals, the set piece goal. I don't know how, I mean, it's a cross in the box.
Benteke goes to try to win it. The one ball in the air he doesn't win all year is this one in his own box, unfortunately.
Yeah. And it's just a fortunate moment. I don't know how too upset I am about it. And the third goal I think is the one to be the most upset about. I understand you want to press. I'm not really mad about you. You brought up Pirani loses the ball. That's going to happen when you're in the attack.
Sure.
Maybe you're mad about the midfield not closing, but you also expect you want to, you know, play that press. And if you are the defenders, you need to be back and make sure you're covering for that offside. So again, we don't have a good look at the offside. We don't know how close it was. It seems like
if he was offside, he was over the, he was before the midfield stripe, right?
Yeah.
He was on. So,
well, before the midfield stripe, but you know, sometimes players cheat a little bit. I expect Duncan de Meyer to time that very well. It's a moment. I'm sure when they get the tape, they're going to bring that up, and you know, it's still refreshing. You know, so many times we've seen this team lose games, and it's like systematic is why they're bad. This was probably their roughest game, maybe not their most clean, their cleanest game, but they still, you know, beat Orlando on XG. They almost tied it. Herrera had an absolute,
oh boy,
rocket that, you know, should have gone into the back of the net. And I think the storyline is this team has to figure out a way to close out games. I think those are things you can coach. I think those are things you can sort of figure out, and, you know, hopefully. And I think, you know, what's funny is Matt Doyle had a comment. He said, yeah, these are the things we talked about with Columbus at the beginning of last year. They struggled to close out games. So some high praise, I think, from
around the league. So therefore, by the transitive property of Matt Doyle, book your MLS Cup season, MLS Cup tickets now. Other questions you should ask Troy about. Wouldn't you like to have some more players so that you could get players like Mattia Cambone and Garrison Tubbs and Jacob Merle minutes at Loudon so these players are not becoming potted plants on your bench?
Yeah. Well, would I you assume rather that's have why, an MLS right? pro team? Yeah.
I assume that's right. Like, obviously, Mattia Cambone, subject of a bid for transfer this summer, we said no, we need to hold on to him, and he has been. There's no way his value is going up right now, so that's a mistake. Garrison Tubbs, a player that was traded for in the run up to the preseason, has been injured, now has made the bench twice in a row, and we're still, you know, we still have a defender, a center back that's likely going to play major minutes when he comes back eventually. So it's just it sort of boggles. I'm thinking maybe at that point one of those two players gets sent out. Once Steve Birnbaum is back, maybe you're able to send Akinboni or Tubbs down to Loudon or somewhere else even.
Yeah, I don't know. And we'll see. You know, if you have either of Bartlett or McVay pick up an injury, does Lassane look at this and see this kind of moment where, you know, not one of them covers back? Does he maybe then sit Bartlett and maybe throw an Akinboni and say, you know, hey, go at it. We've seen him not be afraid to, you know, drop players for moments and say, you know, we need to think of something else and sort of send a message. So I'll be very curious. The lineup against New York is going to be very interesting.
Akinboni has played 22 minutes this season.
Right. I think that was one game too.
Cincinnati.
Yep. Want to get to some Discord questions. 42 says more than any other team last year. I think it was, I think it more than any other team last year. Charlotte, I think it was, dropped more points than any other team in the entire league. And had they not been so inefficient, they would have been on top of the standings. Right now, we're looking at the exact issue. Thoughts on how we can fix this? You know, I think honestly, I mean, I think it's depth is certainly a part of it. You know, you look at who Orlando was able to bring off the bench. They were able to bring off Nicholas Lodero, who's, you know, 35, but still an excellent player, and Duncan McGuire. Duncan McGuire is the one that gets the goal. I think Lodero is the one who maybe even plays the pass to him. That's kind of a difference. And, you know, yes, we were able to bring on Matty Patola and
he's our Pedro Santos is our that guy.
Yeah, basically. He's on, sometimes he's off. It just depends. He's definitely a diet Lodero. He's not certainly not as prolific as Lodero.
He is very diet Lodero, yes.
Quasic says, DC dropping points, player issue or system issue. I think we've talked about this with depth. I don't think it's a system issue. I think it's a nature of the depth and just individual mistakes. And I think, you know, there's ways you can work on that to kind of clean that up.
Here's a question for you. This is a question that got asked of previous coaches, Aaron Almasada, talking about sort of the pressure offense, particularly among the forwards, what's being expected of them to get possession. Do you think Ted Cutipietro's repeated soft tissue injuries are a result of the system he's being asked to play? Do you think that's part of it?
It could be. But I mean, again, DC really didn't play that type of style last year, and he still picked up injuries. So, I mean, it's true. You know, I think it's on the coaching staff to figure out how to, you know, either to build strength in certain areas or to work with him. You know, you can take players that pick up injuries and you can get them into avenues where they can be better. So
similar to Ted, this weekend I hit a double and the first step out of the box I pulled my quad. and that is after last week when I pulled that same quad on a stolen base. So I'm just like a professional athlete basically. If Ted is one, I am one. That's what I'm saying.
Jason says, near a quarter way through the season, do you agree that the team is right around where you would have expected this year? Fringe playoff team battling for 8 or 9. Vibes seen higher than expected, but results on target less. I think this is 100%. This is what we hope for, honestly, coming into this year. This is what we hope for, that we would be in this role. Now that we're here, it's kind of like, and we look better than we could be better than that. It's a little frustrating to be where we are because, you know, we win that game. I think we would have been like third in the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, also it also shows how close it is. So
I think it's good to keep that in mind. I think as people get frustrated, and it's only human nature to get frustrated about a lot of this stuff, do keep in mind. Think about Chris McVay coming here. Think about Lucas Bartlett coming here, Jared Stroud, Connor Antley, Garrison Tubbs, the players that came in. Think about what you thought they were going to, like, who are these guys? This is supposed to bring us somewhere. I can't even imagine. Who is this coach that we just signed? He was a reject. New York Red Bulls didn't even want him. It's helpful to do that because that is who we are. And until we have the depth that we don't have, until we maybe make some moves to alleviate some salary cap burden, which now apparently we can do, you have to be realistic about where we are. The thing that you can be frustrated about is that some of these young players are not doing what you'd maybe hope. Ted Cutipietro can't stay on the field. Christian Fletcher can't turn his 9,000 goals for Swansea's B team into sort of being dangerous at a regular basis. Mattia Caboni can't get on the field. That you can be upset about. But as far as the results overall, I think you have to generally be pleased, because like Ted said, this was our best case scenario looking at our roster, and here we are. So the question is, what do we do in the summer? Does this accelerate the plan? If there was a plan, like, to what we needed to do this summer, does that accelerate it and say, hey, look, you know, we're exactly where we thought we'd be. We're on the cusp. Here's some impact transfers we can make to maybe get a little bit of momentum into the fall, into the playoffs. Maybe.
If I am Ali Mackay, I'm going to ownership, and let's get into this. There's some rule changes that are coming up. Let's start with the one that I think DC fans may be most interested
the best
in,
with, one.
Which is you can now do 2 contract buyouts. So
per year,
yep. So they've increased it, doubled it to 2. There are 2 players that maybe would apply for that. Martin Rodriguez, even though I thought Martin Rodriguez would get an international slot back, apparently he's got a green card.
Thanks a lot, Martin.
Yeah, which I didn't know, but still a lot of salary tied up with him. And of course, Mohamed Yaz. I think we all look at that and say those are two big, big holes in our contract and big holes in our roster that we could look to improve.
Angus talking about on our Twitter like about how much money that would be since Jaz has another year on his contract. I personally don't care about that at all. I would almost there's argument to be made that there's more money. There's a greater benefit spending money on the erasure of these moves than it would be on like going out and buying another one like that. Like giving Makai some room to operate, even at like a lower budget or even within trades within the league, even which he can't make now because those salary caps are covered by these two players. I think it's certainly a valid investment. To make for by ownership to put us in the right spot. Somebody else said on Twitter, I forget who it was. I think it was Brendan. He says, now you get to find out how much of the sunk cost fallacy does ownership believe in with these two players.
Yeah. Yaz, to me, I think I would be, if they just said, look, we're just going to use this on Mohamed Yaz. That's the only player we're going to buy out the contract on.
Fine.
That one I would be maybe okay with because that at least is, you know, Martin Rodriguez is gone next year, regardless. So,
and Martin has actually played more than 1 minute.
Yeah.
So that's an added benefit.
So, I mean, and he doesn't take up an international slot. I think that international slot for me matters a little bit more than necessarily the salary cap at this point, because you want to be able to go in and bring in a player. So, I mean, that's going to be one to watch this year. Will teams start to look to get out of these contracts and to sort of buy them out? We also do have some interesting designated player and U22 initiative player changes. I'll try my best to read this. I've read this a little bit.
Please explain this because I didn't understand it when I read it twice or three times.
So
hopefully you get it.
So basically how it works is, so under the new rules, teams either have three DPs and three U22 players, or they can have two DPs and four U22 players, plus they will get $2 million in additional general allocation money.
If you have the four young, four under 22s,
I think it's I think maybe you get the, you just have the two DPs, you get that role, or maybe you need the U22 players. I don't know quite how that would work. It's an interesting change in the rules. I think it's a small change. U22 is still a rule I don't think anybody has found a way to 100% capitalize on.
I don't like this rule, and I'll tell you why. This is the league trying to adjust the incentive structure of teams, not in a way that makes the teams more exciting to watch, not in a way that makes them more of an attraction at the gate. This is solely about encouraging teams to buy young assets that are resellable at an exponential profit. That's what it is. If they're saying, don't buy these older DPs, we need you to take these lottery tickets on these players, unknown, quote unquote, unknown players out of South America, put them into the MLS machine with their leagues played, with their games played on Apple TV across the world, with the idea that you're able to sell those players and bring greater, greater transfer fees into the league. Although there is changes in how much of your transfer fees get kept by the league versus the teams. But it does not say these changes are about making the best product on the field, the most exciting product on the field, bringing the best names over. It's something else. It's much more of a dollars and cents move and trying to, you know, twist teams' arms to do what the league wants them to do.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
it is sort of framing the league as a selling and developmental type league. But I think that is, to me, it's the play I actually enjoy. I like the idea of the rule being decoupled from the DP rule. That made no sense at all. I wish the U22 rule, I wish it gave a little bit more flexibility on the salary. I think that's the biggest limiting factor of it, is that basically, for those who aren't aware, because MLS rules are a labyrinth of confusion. With the U22 rule, you have a player, 22 years or younger, you can spend as much as you want on transfer fee. If Boca Juniors want to charge you, $15 million in transfer fee, you can pay that for that player, and then you can bring him in, not as a DP, but as a U22 player. You are limited, though. You can only pay them the max amount, like $500,000+, max amount on the salary. I think their idea is that, you know, they're going to, you know, basically it's going to give teams flexibility. You know, they're not going to have to have a situation like Lucas Rodriguez for DC, where, you know, basically the team wanted all their money up front, and DC wanted to split it out for salary cap reasons. The U22 role didn't exist at this time. And so I think that is why that deal fell apart, was mostly due to that. And I think if they had had that deal, they would have been able to bring him in, they would have been able to pay him, and they wouldn't have to concern themselves so much with the cap issues behind it. So I think that's why this rule sort of has come about. I think salary is that big limiting factor, though. I think that's going to limit the amount of talent you're going to be in there. That being said, I still think there are avenues to where if you can be the first team to figure this out and to find players that are extremely talented, bring them in, have them have success. Boy, howdy, you basically are going to put yourself in a position where you're going to have, 6 DPs out there on the field if you can pull this off and do it right. So
no one's done it yet. But yeah, that doesn't mean it can't be done.
Does not mean it can't be done. I sort of disagree with you in a certain sense. I like the direction, at least the direction. You know, I would prefer, obviously, if they just gave a salary cap, you know, doubled it, increased it as much as they could, and then, you know, gave teams the ability to decide how they wanted to do it. Maybe you can chalk up some incentives in there for buying younger players, sort of around that, but sort of allow teams to build the rosters the way that they want to build the rosters. But that being said, you know, I think the incentive for going young is good. I like when teams bring in young, exciting players. I actually enjoy watching those guys grow and become better in the league much more. You know, I'm going to enjoy seeing Matty Patola grow into a elite number six in this league than I am for maybe the year and a half that Rooney was there. And that's just my preference as a fan, you know, because I think I get more. And then I see those players get sold on, move on, and you can talk, you know, you have those moments at least where you can, you know, we talk about it all the time with Kevin Paredes. So I like it. I think, you know, incentivizing young players is good. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what changes this makes, and we'll see what DC does. I'm Ally McKay. I'm banging down the door. I'm being like, look, we gotta remove this dead weight. Look at what I was able to do. Look at who I brought in. Look at how much better this team looks. Trust me to do this the right way, and give me the flexibility to do so. And you can move this from a 2025, maybe we're a contender, to, or 2026 will be a contender, to 2025 will be raring and ready to go. So
just add another fruit snack jersey sponsorship on the other sleeve to pay for it, and then you're done. Surely Gushers will give us $3 million to buy out Mohamed.
Sell an ownership to
another. We need another rapper to
Michelle
buy.
Kang. Get Michelle Kang to join with her soccer empire. Bring her in on board if he needs some more cash. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting to watch. All right. I think that's going to do it for DC MLS related news. Cup coming game against New York City FC, another team.
We didn't talk about it, by the way. We didn't talk about all the players who won't be available.
Yeah, it's going to be right out Mateus Klich, Aaron Herrera. We'll see what the injury report looks like. Both of them on their fifth yellow card, which gives them a suspension for next game.
Stupid.
And, you know, we didn't talk about, I don't think we talked about the referee in the last game. I think DC maybe deserves a little bit of criticism for not recognizing the moment that they were in right now, that very clearly the referee was going to start to use yellow cards. And people complain and they say, well, what, like, they got to control the game without yellow cards. I'm sorry, those yellow cards, they exist for match controlling devices. That's so
right. What else are they going to do? Is he going to like physically manhandle them? Like, the only thing he can do is sternly decide or give them yellows. That's it.
The only call I'm necessarily mad about was there was a situation where DC had a free kick and Orlando players are standing in front of the ball, not respecting the distance. They, you know, DC wants to go, they try to kick the ball, and then they, you know, they give the free kick again, but the referee doesn't come back to card the player who made that call. And to me, that's automatic yellow every time. It's written right in the rule. Like, that's not one you can judge or debate. So that's the one I'm really mad about. all of DC's yellow cards were deserved. Aaron Herrera comes up, throws, basically pushes down a player. You can't do that. He's going to get the yellow along with the guy on the initial foul. Jackson Hopkins, I think, grabs out of the guy, stops and play. No attempt to play the ball. That's a yellow. Benteke,
His
was persistent infringement. The referee goes over to him and says 1, 2, 3, 4. Next one's a yellow. It's a soft call, certainly. And, certainly I think Orlando's trying to bait it a little bit. But the referee calls the foul. He's got to give the card there. There was calls for dissent on Click. No one here heard what the referee said or what Click was talking about the referee. So I don't think we can sit here and say and judge it or say that, it was this. I thought the referee was fine. He made the calls he needed to make. I don't think there was anything egregious he missed other than that one lack of yellow for respecting the distance. Fans, I understand, are going to get upset after a game and maybe they look to certain things about the referee. I don't take that avenue. So that's my
never.
That's my defense. All right, let's shift to happier times. Look for our. I'll tease our written stuff about the upcoming game against New York City. So just know they're struggling. It's another moment. Maybe we can get our first road win. But again, City Field. So I think it'll be in Queens. I think I called it Shea Stadium. I'm still used to.
He's old, apparently. This guy over here talking about Shea Stadium
over at City Field.
There's a giant apple that's going to come out of center field for the Shea Stadium whenever a goal gets scored.
I cannot wait for New York City to get their own stadium, so we never have to see that again. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk positive vibes coming up. The Washington Spirit are crushing it right now. They are crushing it so bad. Maria Sanchez wants to leave her current team after getting dunked on by Croy Bethune. And she's
it's like the DC United coach killing run that they won in the last couple of years, the Chris Armas coach killing.
Now, according to reliable sources, it has nothing to do with the Spirit. She actually had requested a trade before the Bay FC game.
I don't want to believe that. I don't like that to be true. So I'm going to ignore that well-sourced reporting. Don't care.
We can say that she requested it. Things weren't getting done on it. And then she watched that game. And then that caused her to then leak really it to the press.
Right. She super requested it. So obviously rolling in on a Friday for their first Amazon game of the year. I thought that presentation was great, by the way. I don't know if you agreed.
It's so professional. Great. I think whenever there was a player who scored a goal, they threw their image up in the corner. I don't know. I love the little things in certain broadcasts. It's Amazon doing an excellent job.
Yep.
But the broadcast.
For sure. I'm trying to think. I don't think there were any changes to the starting lineup from last week. I think Hatch, Ulisar, and Trinity Rodman all were in the last game. Not sure. This is, I think this is the third win in a row. Fourth mm-hmm. one, third win in a row. Anyway, so Houston Dash, a team that has been struggling this season, I think you could conceivably say. There was conversation, I think, in the offseason, like this was going to be their big turnaround year. They gave Maria Sanchez a league record, I believe, a new contract to try to make her happy. Although she has not really produced on the field so far in her career for the Dash very well. So interesting that they still made that effort. But this was a game you'd want to see them win. All full complement of players were available on regular amount of rest. So it was a bit of a shock when 1 minute into the game, Houston takes the lead. Former Spirit player Natalie Jacobs scores on a ball in the sort of a mess, playing out of the back created sort of mess. That the ball squirts into the middle of the six, and Natalie Jacobs gets a chance to put her foot behind it and take an early lead. This is the second goal of the year in less than 3 minutes into the game. It's the third goal in 11 minutes or earlier. So this is a bit of a thing that the team probably should focus on. I think it's better you remember they had another thing where they used to concede after the 90th minute to drop points. This is better than that. If they're going to have a thing, this one is surmountable, clearly. But still, it's a bit of a trend now. It's becoming one.
Yeah, my only thought on that goal, I don't know what the defensive set piece plan was, but If I'm the coach, I am going to throw it up. And we were having a set piece drill. I'm throwing that up and say, let's not do that again. It was almost like a line of Spirit players sort of lining up to the goal. And they almost moved like no one knew, you know, where to move to actually like get the ball. They all kind of moved away and just sort of left a perfect line directly to the goal. Yeah. Not a strong moment.
It's one of those things where it's one of those things where they might have gotten too complicated for a thing that's simple.
Yeah.
In an effort to be Barcelona 2, maybe you just sort of play it straight on stuff like this. But either way, they got down early. That was just sort of the story. And they could not find an equalizer for the entire first half. It was a bit of a problem from that perspective. Trinity Rodman continues to be a bit snake bitten from a goal scoring perspective.
Mm-hmm.
She continues to create. She had, I think, in the 94th minute, had an opportunity she probably should have put away. They're winning. That's great. Are you at all concerned by her inability to find the back of the net this season?
No, because she's doing everything else so well.
She and is doing everything
when
else well.
when she gets on the ball. I am so amazed. I was not certain this style would fit her. I thought she's a player who likes to go in the dribble. She likes to go fast, go quickly. And then I just realized that's just all we've seen her. That's all we've seen her do. So I think I am continually impressed. I think this meticulous slow buildup is starting to show us some of her exceptionally high soccer IQ and really show her ability to not just to be able to beat players on the run. Even sort of in a slow run and you know, able to sort of dribble players, she's still able to be so incredibly effective. She is doing so much for this team. It is not a coincidence in my mind that the worst game of the year was when she was not on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else has been great for this team. I think the best thing about this is it's sort of helping. I think it's helped a lot of the college players. Your Croy Bethune, who had a rough start, and I was like, yeah, this could be a long time. This was her best game of the year. She was fantastic. By the way, I did some stat lookups because I guess what sort of drew me to this game, I think she created at least two really excellent, you know, through balls that created shot opportunities. I think for one for Trinity Rodman, and I think another one, I can't remember who it was for. But then I looked, I said, wow, that's like a really advanced adult play. Like for a player that's, you know, just coming out of college, that's the type of stuff she was doing in college. That was so impressive to me. She is currently, according to FB Ref, she's at 4.53 shot creating actions, per 90.
That's great.
Which is excellent. And then, you know, want to know, and I looked up Ashley Sanchez.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Ashley Sanchez is at 5. So, okay. If for a player, you know, who probably costs a little bit less right now against the cap, you know, it's excellent to see. We were all after that first game worried about where this team was going to be. We were wondering, you know, this doesn't seem right. And then we're like, well, you know, okay, we're going to bring in some talent. You know, things will get better. We're going to bring in probably one of the best coaching hires, one of the most in-demand coaches in women's soccer. You know, maybe it'll get better. You know, I think there's still some people that are upset with the way the trade went down. Fair. But I think we have to give a little credit to Mark Kerkorian, because I think he is proving that he was maybe right about wanting to make the changes he did. And maybe his talent scouting abilities are maybe a little better than we thought in certain respects.
So, yes, the one thing that the team continues to do, I think, and I think it's starting to become maybe the prevailing sentiment among Spear fans, is that they are trying to fit a square peg in a round hole with Uli Saar
mm-hmm.
at the nine.
I thought she was better in this game. I thought she had some moments.
Yeah. Better is absolutely fine. But it is, when you watch this team and you look at the attacking four and see the way they move, she is the weak point. She's undoubtedly the weak point. And forcing Ashley Hatch to play as a second striker or a winger to accommodate her is not the way that I would do things. I think that there, if there's an opportunity to spend more money on, if you want on a left winger, or
well,
if you
want
to play, well, yeah, but she, is she going to play there? Or is she going to play in a different position?
I think she tends, I'll have to, again, I'll need to do some more scouting, but I mean, where I saw most, I mean, the goal that she scored against England comes from the wing. I think it's more of the right wing than left wing, but
Trinity can switch. That, yeah. There's no, I think that it's just, obviously she gets the assist and we'll talk about that in a second, but I don't see it necessarily. I think that it would be a decent thing in the summer to move on from. I think, particularly if it depends on what your goals are for this season. You've got a young team similar to where we were in 2019, right? Like, do you want to win the cup? If you want to win the cup, I think you move on from this. If you are saying we're going to give Hal and we're going to give Croy a million minutes. We're going to give them all the games. They're going to come into next season like NWSL young veterans right away. Then, you know, maybe you ride it out, and then that gives you a chance to give Courtney Brown more minutes. It gives you a chance to see what else you've got from the forwards. You've got Savannah Coleman coming back from her 9,000th ACL surgery probably at the end of the year as another forward option. Lena Solano could potentially also come in that spot. But I think that if you look at this team, other than, you know, we still say center back could do some fixing. That's it. That's the only place. Those are the only spots.
And we talked about, you know, I kind of, first game of the year, I'm like, oh, this could be a long season. This could be a season where maybe we put it together mid-season. But after these last three games, and I think really they have to figure out how to stop starting the slow starts. I think they do have to figure out how to get more on the front foot. I thought we saw them maybe adjust their game a little bit. They were a little more pressed. They pressed the ball a little bit more. Their first goal comes from Bethune and Bethune and Howe kind of pressuring the Houston defender, forces a cough up, and Howe does an incredible job finishing it. So that came from a press. That didn't come from a beautiful pass sequence. And then you see them also, I think they put together, Opta put out a stat, and I need to go find it. Something like they put together Yeah, 11. There were 11 passes in the Croy Bethune goal, the 84th minute. 11 passes in the build up Friday, equaling the longest in the NWSL this season and the longest in this for the Spirit since 2021. So,
damn.
like, and you watch that goal. It is, and it comes almost right after the second goal.
Let's talk about that, because I think that needs to. So, Brittany Ratcliffe has been a not frequently used player so far this season. I think it's had one start so far this season. She was one of two free agent signings other than Casey Krueger. Kind of just sort of question how she sort of fit in. But as we just talked about, sort of the type of players that you sign and the way you build your roster and what DC United doesn't have. DC United doesn't have a Brittany Ratcliffe, right? Mm-hmm. A proven young veteran with an ability to change the game off the field or off the bench, with the ability to score her own goals. Those are the players you got to have, so that when someone's hurt, you're not necessarily turning to Lena Solano to produce a goal off the bench, not having done so in her career. Brittany Ratcliffe is Houston. I don't know. Maybe they got hypnotized by the orange hair tie, mm-hmm. and just like thought maybe she's on our team and we're not going to close down. Gets 50 feet of space at the top of the 18, pushes the ball to the left. Takes her left foot, puts her foot through it, and scores on the far post past a Jane Campbell who was furious at her defense for not doing anything about it. But that was I think I would say maybe goal of the year as far as best struck goal. I've got to go back and check for the Spirit, but maybe not. But it was certainly a great goal, awesome goal, and good for her to get the opportunity. And then to your point, there was a Barcelona like 10. How many passes?
11 passes.
11 passes. I just love Gabby Carl's ball that she put in there. There, you don't see that particular goal does not get scored on by the Spirit very frequently, which is a long cross headed goal. And that ball was put in a perfect spot. Croy did not miss. She was in it. She was in the, made the perfect back post run, was composed, was able to finish it into the roof of the net from right outside just a great goal for a young player. And should have been 4-1 with Trinity Rodman, who got played in, I believe, by Croy in the 90-something minute and couldn't get around Jane Campbell. So just a dissembling in the second half.
That's going to be a fun thing to watch. And really, Croy's vision, I absolutely adore Ashley Sanchez still to this day, but I do feel like Croy can see the game maybe a little bit better than she did. And again, she had a rough couple of years. So, you know, Ashley Sanchez was great because she would go and do something that you wouldn't expect, and it would create an opportunity or a chance. But I always felt sometimes she would try to take the ball in the dribble when maybe there was a pass, and you're seeing Croy look up and see these passes and see those lanes. So I think after this game, I'm impressed with how quickly she has sort of, over the past three games, I talk about young players, you know, you want to see that progression. You want to see that next thing. You want to see them sort of start to add things to their game. We went from, you know, looking like it was going to be a struggle to, wow, there's something really here. And I think that her emergence in this game has sort of upped my expectations for what this team can be this year. So, because you're fantastic.
She is. And I am still, having seen her now a bunch of times in person, that her patience to wait for a play to develop to make the pass instead of feeling like she has to make a decision by the being dictated by the other players around her, it's not there. She's like a very impressive self-confidence and patience, an internal clock, which is, you can't teach that. That's just something that she's got or doesn't have. So
yeah,
we should say this is also Andy Sullivan's 100th career appearance with the Spirit. So congrats to her. She's the third player and second outfield player, third outfield player, Torrey Huster at 159. So that's going to be hard to catch. Aubrey Kingsbury with 110 and Hatch with 109. So still, congrats. You gotta take for a league that has so much player turnover year to year, you gotta take your, long duration player, lapse when you can. So we talked about Trinity's sort of snake bittenness, but it's okay because she's doing every single other thing in the world.
And it's more like if the other part wasn't there, then yes, maybe you're a little worried, but you see the other part and you just know eventually those goals are going to come. Like, they're going to come. And her being a provider and setting up plays also, I think, is maybe a vastly, maybe a little bit more important role for her than, because she is going to occupy that space, that it's going to open up other players and other opportunities. So I'm not worried at all.
So Chloe Ricketts finally gets in a game and it counts in the 90th minute. That's a legal substitution.
She's on the roster.
She's on the roster. It's legal now. Paige Mateer comes in, plays about 15 minutes. Courtney Brown, again, a surprise player out of this draft class to get more minutes than probably people would have thought she would have. Brittany Radcliffe scores the goal off the bench, and Lena Solano comes in at the 90 minute also. So that's a great sign. Paige Mateer and Lena Solano were two players that were missing in action for the first couple weeks. So now Adrian Gonzalez has gotten them involved. Anna Halferty did not feature. Would like to see, figure out what that's going to be like going forward. Defenders, I think that he likes, Gonzalez likes to keep his defenders out there unless they get injured typically. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunate for the substitutes perspective, but there, because other than that, if you look at that's another reason. The three on you substitutions were a goalkeeper, Heather Stainbrook, and Halferty. So the one defender, there was no other defenders on the bench. So that's probably why she stayed.
The depth is a little lacking in the center back, mm-hmm. in the center back world. So, but I think overall, you know, I think still vibes are good right now with the team. And I think the, you know, Battelle, I thought, had some moments in this game. She was really, really good. Also, Mickey Owen continues to sort of develop as a defender. So I think it's all good things.
So they've got Gotham coming into town on Saturday.
That's
right now the Spirit are 3-1-0 and 1 point out of first, and Gotham are 1-1-1, sitting seventh in the table.
Yeah,
so by the way, without looking, and I've not been doing a good job of like around the league information. Who do you think is at the bottom of NWSL right now?
Just Portland. I think it's Portland, yes, right?
Portland.
It's Portland. Yeah,
with a -4 goal differential and no wins.
Absolutely.
NWSL can't predict it, but then also be assured that somehow they'll be towards the top at the end of the year, just because it invariably seems that way. Maybe this is the year it runs out. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, but you talk about, you know, the all of the signings for Gotham FC this past week, they were supposed to be the super team. And they've struggled a little bit. They only have one win. And that game against Portland, who we talked about, are awful, bad right now. So, So that's certainly something to watch. I think this will be an interesting test for the team. They'll be back at home. I think they're looking hopefully to sell some tickets. I believe this will be a blackout. I think they've talked about it. So
$15 for a beer and a ticket. So if you've not gotten that, it's certainly a good opportunity. Spirit are also third in the league in goal differential. So at +3. So that's actually wild how much of the league is at zero or negative from a goal differential perspective. Houston Dash -5. So that's and North Carolina +6 because they've had some blowouts. So, it's early days. But I think this team is in a better spot than we would have thought. And, look at our Twitter. We are giving our apologies to Marco Corian, at least early on in the year. We didn't know what we were talking about. We were unfamiliar with his game, but please do sign a center back and sort out the nine.
Yeah.
Or the left wing.
By the way, in case you're curious too, Spirit currently second in expected goals.
I believe it.
That's 7.3. So we talk about that first game where they looked bad. They are about mid-table to unexpected goals against at 4.2. So, and they are, let's see, they are basically right around there. They're right around their expected goals, and they are right around on their expected goals against. So they're efficient, at least on that regard. So, all right, folks, think that's going to do it for this episode. Again, we'll have our written content coming up. You can check that out on our Patreon page. We'll definitely work on getting some more content out to you guys. You guys seem to love it. So join us, patreon.com/RFQRefugees. Also, again, follow us on YouTube, Twitter. We're also going to look into Twitch. So hit us up
and
there
TikTok,
as well.
TikTok, apparently. As long as that app exists.
I meant to say TikTok. Yes, we're going to look at TikTok. So thank you guys so much for watching. We will catch you guys next week. Vamos.
Vamos.